Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you very much. Various religious organizations bring shame and disgrace on their people when the representatives of those groups misbehave. When a preacher among churches of Christ becomes involved in shady business dealings or is unfaithful to his wife, his behavior not only affects churches of Christ, it reflects adversely on all churches or parachurch groups. Jimmy Swaggart's addiction to pornography and prostitution and Jim Baker's sleazy business dealings caused millions of Americans to wonder if all preachers, not just Pentecostal preachers, were hypocrites and moral reprobates. The Episcopal Church's elevation of an openly homosexual priest to be a bishop gives many people the impression that biblical moral values are meaningless, at least for some churches. But child sexual abuse by Roman Catholic priests has done more in the last few years to cause people to wonder about the devotion and sincerity of religious leaders than any other phase of the American religious scene. Thousands of priests have maliciously abused little children, primarily little boys. I plan to furnish some statistical information on the number of priests and the number of children involved in this scandal. But first, I must condemn in the strongest possible terms the sexual abuse of children. The little boys and girls who are abused by religious leaders will likely suffer for the rest of their lives. Many of them will distrust and probably hate all religious leaders, including priests, preachers, and rabbis. In addition, thousands of them will have psychological and physical difficulties. They may not be able to adjust to a healthy sexual relationship in marriage. Great numbers of them will turn away from all religion because the priests they trusted were interested only in the satisfaction of their own lusts, not in the welfare of the children. Our Lord did not directly address the problem of child abuse, sexual or otherwise. But what He taught about mistreating and offending children covers the sexual abuse of children. Please listen carefully to this very revealing passage. At the same time, the disciples came to Jesus saying, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" And Jesus called a little child unto Him, and set him in the midst of them, and said, "Verily I say unto you, except you turn and become as little children, you shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Whosoever therefore shall humble himself as this little child, the same is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoso shall receive one such little child in my name receives me. But whoso shall offend one of these little ones who believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the depth of the sea." Matthew 18:1-6. In his excellent commentary, The Interpretation of St. Matthew's Gospel, Dr. R.C.H. Lenski, a scholarly Lutheran preacher, explains what is involved in the term "shall offend." The figure is that of an animal caught by touching the bait affixed to the crooked stick of a dead fall trap. The sense is, whosoever destroys a child or a childlike believer spiritually incurs the greatest wrath of Christ. Jesus thus describes the extreme mistreatment, for nothing worse could be done. Page 686. Many of the children who are sexually abused by authority figures, whether by teachers or by parents or by religious leaders, become sexual predators. Some of the boys and girls turn to prostitution to get what they want in life. Those who have been abused may in turn abuse their own children. What a tragedy that men who are supposed to be leading others in paths of righteousness are actually destroying the faith and the lives of children. It grieves me to watch grown men weep because some priest has robbed them of their childhood. Stealing from some business establishment or from the coffers of the church they serve would be much more honorable. Suicide is not unknown among the children who have been abused by a priest or by some other religious leader. Nobody knows how many priests have been involved in the sexual abuse of children. The Roman Catholic Church has worked diligently and spent hundreds of millions of dollars to make sure the sins of her priests are hidden from the media, from the police, and from the public. The leaders in the Catholic Church had to know what was transpiring, but used its enormous political and financial power to keep the priestly sexual abuse secret. Because of the Catholic Church's cover-up of the abuse, many of the priests probably felt they could continue their abominable practices without being punished or even discovered. Dozens of priests have been abusing little children for years. It is an absolute disgrace that any organization, especially a religious one, would engage in activities so immoral and illegal and then keep them under wraps for years and years. Because of the power of the Roman Catholic Church, especially in cities like Boston, the media have always been reluctant to report on the immoral behavior, such as drunkenness and sexual abuse of children, of the priests and other leaders in the Catholic Church. Since newspapers, radio and television stations in major media markets are often owned or controlled by influential members of the Catholic Church, the employees of those media outlets know their jobs are in jeopardy when they report the misdeeds of the priests. In fact, the priestly abuse of children would not likely have been uncovered and reported had it not been for newspapers and other news media that the Catholic Church or its members do not control. How can any church or religious school or parachurch group deliberately flaunt the laws of our land and the teaching of God's Word by trying to hide the illegal activities of its leaders? Many policemen, district attorneys, and other law enforcement personnel in some of the major cities are members of the Roman Catholic Church. Is anyone so naive as to believe that police officers and detectives who are members of the Catholic Church will investigate the criminal conduct of the priest to whom the officers confess their sins? Most Catholics are reared to believe that the priest can do no wrong, that whatever the priest says or does is the will of God. Even though the policemen and other officers of the court have sworn to enforce the law, many of them simply will not arrest a priest or a bishop. The policemen know their jobs could be on the line if they arrest a priest. The policemen may also fear for their eternal welfare. I have already mentioned the fact that nobody knows the extent of the priestly abuse of children. But I have newspaper articles and other sources I would like to discuss at this time. On Thursday, July the 24th, 2003, Kathy Lynn Grossman, columnist for USA Today, wrote an article with the title, "Report Says Boston Priests Abused 1,000 Children." Please listen to a few brief excerpts from Grossman's article. Roman Catholic Church leaders have allowed the sexual abuse of more than 1,000 children in the Boston Archdiocese since 1940. The Massachusetts Attorney General said Wednesday, in a scathing report on the crisis that he called so massive and so prolonged that it borders on the unbelievable. The report estimates that more than 250 priests and staff members were involved in the abuse. The scandal exploded in January 2002 with the conviction of a notorious pedophile priest. Investigations nationwide led to estimates that about 1,500 priests might have molested children since 1960. Page 3A. Incidentally, the word pedophile refers to a person who has a morbid sexual interest in children. The USA Today article revealed some very disturbing statistics about pedophilia among Roman Catholic priests. But the situation is actually much worse than the article indicates. On Tuesday, February the 17th, 2004, the Tennessean published a front-page headline entitled, "Catholic Clergy Sex Abuse Data Released." According to the article, the Nashville Diocese says 7 of 378 priests credibly accused since 1950. The article quotes CNN as saying that 11,000 children were possibly abused since 1950. Nearly 4,500 Roman Catholic priests have been accused of sexually abusing children in the United States between 1950 and 2002. These figures are two or three times as high as previously reported. But senior Catholic officials have warned for weeks that the study's findings could be startling if viewed in isolation. Page 1A. What do those senior Catholic officials mean by the expression, if viewed in isolation? Those statistics are startling however you view them. To be honest, they are downright disgusting. The Tennessean lists five of the Nashville priests who abused children. Paul Frederick Haas died in 1978. More than 100 people accused Haas of abusing them. Edward McCowan molested a number of children before he was finally removed from the priesthood. He is currently serving a 25-year prison sentence for raping a 12-year-old boy after he left the priesthood. Franklin T. Richards told police he abused about 25 boys. Tragically, the statute of limitations ran out on Richards before he could be convicted. Page 2A. The news media have furnished much more information about pedophile priests, but I shall turn now to a number of recent books on the priestly abuse of children. Some of the men who wrote the books are longtime members of the Roman Catholic Church. The investigative staff of the Boston Globe published a book with the title, Betrayal, The Crisis in the Catholic Church. The writers are very critical of Cardinal Law, the longtime Roman Catholic Archbishop of Boston. Law admitted to having given John J. Gagan a plum job as parochial vicar of an affluent suburban parish, despite having been notified just 2 months previously that Gagan was alleged to have molested seven boys. The investigative reporters affirm dozens of Boston area priests had molested minors, and in too many cases, bishops had known about the abuse but failed to remove the priest from their jobs. An investigation by a group called the Spotlight Team revealed, since the mid-1990s, more than 130 people have come forward with horrific childhood tales about how former priest John J. Gagan allegedly fondled or raped them during a three-decade spree through a half-dozen greater Boston parishes. Page 9 of the foreword. The victims of John J. Gagan were primarily grammar school boys. One of the boys was just 4 years old. 4 years old. Page 10 of the foreword. Peter Pollard, one of the boys abused by a Catholic priest, wrote to Cardinal Law requesting that the priest never be allowed to be near children again. A portion of Pollard's letter is included in the book, Betrayal. Please listen carefully as I read from the letter. To those who ask that we forgive and forget, please understand. The survivors, each of us in his own way, have spent our lives trying to move on, always weighing those two options. For some of us, suicide, substance abuse, or violence ended the struggle early. To varying degrees, those of us who have survived have begun to heal. We reclaimed dreams, earned degrees, formed families, went to work, even sought solace in spiritual practice. But we cannot escape the effects of the betrayals that were committed against us in God's name. They are inexorably woven into the texture of who we have become. That offense may not be a chargeable offense in a court of law, but there is no statute of limitation on its impact, and there should be no forgetting. Page 9. The Boston Globe reporters provide information on a Roman Catholic priest by the name of James Porter. Porter was a serial child molester. He pleaded guilty to 41 counts of sexual assault and was sentenced to prison. The Fall River Diocese agreed to pay more than $7 million to his victims. Two priests in St. Mary's Diocese in North Attleboro had actually witnessed Porter's abuse of young children. The bishop shuffled Porter from parish to parish in an effort to convince his victims that something had been done. Even Vatican officials under Pope Paul VI knew of Porter's obsessive sexual compulsion for children. Page 44. Paul R. Shanley served as a priest in the Boston area. At a talk in Rochester, New York in 1977, Shanley publicly asserted that he could think of no sexual acts that caused psychic damage to children, including incest and bestiality, and argued that the child is often the seducer in man-boy sexual relationships. Page 67. Cardinal Law knew of the behavior and teaching of Shanley, but in spite of that, Law commended Shanley. Without doubt, over all these years of generous and zealous care, the lives and hearts of many people have been touched by your sharing of the Lord's Spirit. You are truly appreciated for what you have done. Page 69. It took 35 years of sex abuse complaints to attract the attention of the police. The 71-year-old priest faced the prospect of spending the rest of his life in prison. Page 71. There is more in this very troubling book, but I shall read just one more statement at this time. Timothy J. Lambert said of the priest who molested him when he was in the sixth grade, "He took everything. He took my innocence. He took my spirituality. He took my purity." How bad is it when your first sexual experience happened when you're unwilling, a minor? It's a homosexual experience, and at the hands of a priest. Lambert started drinking within days of his molestation. "It's the way I medicated myself," he now says. Page 80. David France has covered the scandal in the Roman Catholic Church as a senior editor for Newsweek magazine. His book, Our Fathers, The Secret Life of the Catholic Church in an Age of Scandal, is the most devastating critique of Catholicism, not just the sexual abuse scandal, I have read in a long time. France provides more than 650 pages of information about the corruption that exists in the Roman Catholic Church. I shall primarily confine my remarks to what he has written about Joseph Birmingham, a man who was ordained a priest in 1960. Birmingham established a self-styled afternoon chaplaincy, tooling around in his gold Plymouth Fury to collect boys and to take them to ball games, movies, or the beach. Girls were never invited. Page 59. He molested Tom Blanchett about 100 times. He also molested Tom Blanchett's four brothers. Page 72. When Birmingham was finally arrested for raping a 12-year-old boy, he said to the arresting officer, "Wait a minute right there. Do you know who you're talking to? I'm a Roman Catholic priest. You should be ashamed of yourself for even suggesting this to me. You're suggesting that I would do something so evil, something that bad." Page 109. Joseph Birmingham died of AIDS and probably spread it to a number of boys he molested. Cardinal Law presided over Birmingham's funeral, eulogizing in poetic strains a man whom he personally removed from regular parish work and who died in spiritual limbo. The cardinal did not allude to the harm he had visited upon his flock. Rather, he praised Birmingham's service, his faith, and his pastorate. Page 190. The state of Louisiana has a large contingency of Roman Catholic members. That state has also had to deal with priests who sexually abuse little boys. At Shreveport, Louisiana, a grand jury indicted Gilbert Gautier on 34 counts of aggravated crimes against nature, immoral acts, producing child pornography, and aggravated rape. One of the young men was just 12 years of age. The unfolding revelations about Gautier were stark and unseemly. It now appeared that nearly 100 boys and young men had been sodomized. Page 154. Ray Moten, an attorney hired by Lafayette Catholic officials, was hoping to bargain with the district attorney for leniency for Gautier, perhaps lengthy confinement in a hospital setting. If the DA learned about the other cases he knew, Gautier's chances were nil. He would be forced to stand trial, which the diocese wanted to avoid, and the scandal would surely explode. Page 159. David France cites some statistics that are comparable to what I have already given to you, but I believe they're worth considering. Since 1990, 20 bishops worldwide had been swept out of their dioceses under clouds of sexual scandal. The crisis that began as a Boston phenomenon now reached nearly every American diocese and implicated more than 1,200 priests, 432 of whom were still in active service and had been forced to resign, retire, or seek laicization. According to the New York Times, the number of people who had proclaimed their abuse in press remarks or lawsuits was 4,268. 80% of them were male. In Manchester, New Hampshire, 7.7% of ordained clerics faced charges. In Baltimore, the number was 6.2%. And in Boston, of the 1,774 priests ordained between 1950 and 2002, 5.3% drew complaints about sexual wrongdoing. Pages 561 and 562. I do not want to burden you with an excessive amount of information regarding priestly abuse of children, but I have one other source I would like to cite before our time expires today. Gary Wills, a highly respected social critic, has been a Roman Catholic for many years. He does not write as an outside critic, but as one who has personally seen and known many of the crises that have faced the Roman Catholic Church. His book has the title, Papal Sin, Structures of Deceit. The San Francisco Chronicle calls Will's book a valuable report on lies in high holy places, lies with enormous implications for all people of faith. Andrew Greeley, a Roman Catholic scholar, wrote concerning Will's book, "Those who care about the impact of the papacy in the contemporary world should take papal sin seriously." Please listen to this paragraph from Gary Will's book. In cases of priest molestation, church officials have tried to restrict coverage of the facts. Prominent Catholics call newspapers to suppress stories. Bishop Grayman revealed resentment of the media as if they had created the problems they reported. The local paper covering the LaSalle County priest was boycotted and in danger of bankruptcy from a loss of advertising revenue. No diocese of the nation's 188 has been without its pedophilia cases. In September 1994, 60 priests or brothers were in prison for child abuse and many more in various recovery programs. Disheartening enough are the individual cases, including one of the Franciscan priest, Ruth Ritter, a founder of New York City's Covenant House, a man who had been considered a modern Flanagan protecting the young. Even sadder is the uncovering of whole cultures of pedophilia, as in Mount Cashel, the Christian Brothers Orphanage in Newfoundland. In that orphanage in Newfoundland, 9 Christian brothers, 2 of whom were lovers, sodomized, whipped, punched, fondled, and degraded at least 30 Mount Cashel boys for more than 20 years. Testimony pointed to a ring of overlapping pedophiles and sadomasochistic homosexuals, including 5 men living in town, who had grown up in the orphanage and returned to molest boys. Page 185. In today's lesson, I have given you an enormous amount of information about pedophilia within Roman Catholicism. An article in the Tennessean, Saturday, February the 28th, 2004, has the title, "Bishop Says Church's Sex Abuse Problem Mirrors Society's." Edward Kimmick, Bishop of the Nashville Diocese, says he believes that the behavior of Catholic priests mirrors society's sex abuse problem. If that were not such a troubling observation, it would be almost humorous. How inexcusably ridiculous can a religious leader be? Even if the Roman Catholic bishop were correct, and he most definitely is not, is it not a shame that religious leaders live like the people of the world? Are not those who occupy positions of leadership in various religious organizations supposed to live by the precepts of their faith? What Paul demanded of Timothy applies to all preachers, elders, and other leaders, not just to young men. Let no man despise your youth, but be an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity. 1 Timothy 4:12. God requires that men, preachers included, treat the elder women as mothers, the younger women as sisters, with all purity. 1 Timothy 5:2. Sexually abusing a person, whether young or old, is an abominable practice. It is both immoral and illegal. When a priest or preacher or rabbi or any other person abuses a child, the abuser should be jailed for a long, long time, maybe for the rest of his natural life. Imprisoning is the only preventative for child abuse. Psychiatric counseling almost never does any good. The abuser just keeps on abusing, even after he is released from therapy. Nearly all of the sexual abusers I have mentioned today had counseling, but it did not stop their abuse of children. Some of them had counseling several times, but it apparently did no good. The American Conference of Roman Catholic Bishops sought to repair the damage that had been done by priests and to prevent such tragedies in the future. According to an article in the Tennessean, Tuesday, February 24, 2004, the Vatican expressed some doubt about what the American bishops had decided. The bishops voted for a zero-tolerance policy. Some of the leaders in Catholicism argued that the position of the American bishops was an overreaction. Dr. Carl Hansen, an expert on sex offenders, says a priest at risk of abusing a child may be better off in the church where there are strong supervisory structures than in somebody else's backyard. Page 4A. Does Dr. Hansen not know that those so-called strong supervisory structures had been in place for years, but did not prevent the priestly abuse of thousands and thousands of children, especially little boys? The article quotes other experts as saying that zero tolerance might discourage abusers from seeking treatment and might deprive church leaders of using abusers' future place in the church as leverage for getting them to enter and to remain in treatment. Page 4A. Zero tolerance might indeed discourage some abusive priests from seeking treatment. But if the past experiences of treatment of abusive priests is a key to the future, treatment would be a waste of time and money anyway. Besides, when psychiatrists and psychologists have pronounced the abusive priest cured, the priests keep right on abusing. The psychiatrists and psychologists do not know when a pedophile is cured. In fact, there is strong evidence they are never cured. They just need to be kept in jail. As our time draws to a close, I have some questions I must ask. Obviously, I do not have time to respond to the questions today. The Lord willing, I shall answer them in our study next Lord's Day. Why do Roman Catholic priests abuse so many children, especially little boys? Does the fact that Catholic priests may not marry have any bearing on the shameful abuse of children? Is there any scriptural authority for forcing men and women to remain celibate? Are celibate people more righteous and more productive in the Lord's service than married people? Is it possible that the entire Roman Catholic system is flawed, seriously flawed, and always has been flawed? Thank you for listening, and may God bless you.